business meeting October 7th.
So moved.
Seconded by...
Yes, sir.
Roberts. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Having none? Sign away. That would for the, and then I'd also entertain a motion to accept the minutes for the October 15th meeting. Well, that was for the October 7th. This was for the October 15th meeting.
So moved.
Take a motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All righty. Resolutions. Establishing a policy to prohibit appointees of Ulster County elected officials and Board of Election staff from holding any elective public office of any city, town, or village within Ulster County. The sponsor of the resolution is not present, and he asked if he would like to speak on this, so I'd like to suspend to a special meeting tomorrow, a short meeting on the issue.
Fair enough.
Okay.
All those in favor?
I'll move it first.
Move it? I'm sorry.
Second.
Move it seconded.
I'll move to postpone.
All right. Let's postpone their special meeting of tomorrow for a short period before.
What time will that be?
It would be, what time would that be?
6:50.
Yeah.
Postponing.
Just 374 until tomorrow.
Or do we need more time? More than 10 minutes?
No,
I don't think so.
All right, all those in favor of that postponement?
Aye.
Any opposed? None? Moved.
March is here.
All right, we have, March. The comptroller-elect. You're here before us in dealing with your budget, or your proposed budget.
Hi, thank you for giving me the opportunity tonight. I really look forward to working with all of you, and I'm excited to take the position January 1st. I've been working with staff and the team downstairs now, and with Dave's help, have put in 3 budget amendments, so I just want to highlight what those are, see if you have any questions, and I'll turn it over to Evan to talk a little bit more about it. We won't take a lot of time, but basically the 3 amendments are, one, to turn the administrative assistant role into a confidential secretary. This is the only countywide elected position without a confidential secretary. Many department heads already have one. I do not see this as a political appointment. I really need somebody in that seat who can make an infographic. That's number one. Number two is restoring the 4 auditors who are in the office to their 40 hours. I've been down there watching workflow. They're literally working to the minute when it's time to leave and can't really finish what's on their plate. So I would ask you to consider that. And then the third one is to increase the salary of the director of audit and internal control. That position really is underfunded. It's very hard to retain staff there or to find people to take that position because it oversees 4 audit positions, and some of those CSEA positions currently make more than what that is budgeted for.
Arch, could you answer a question? Is that actually an increase, or is that going back to the rate that it once was?
It actually would be an increase over what it once was. Yeah, so it would be an increase, and I believe County Executive's budget actually reduced the hours of that position, so that's a change from that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the job hadn't been filled for the entire year, so that I think that's what we found to be the error. So
it was a partial.
It was a partial year, and I don't think it was made aware.
So altogether, when we first put forward these amendments, they were around $50,000. We've since determined, actually, that retirement was not fully included with the added retirement cost. So altogether, all 3 of them altogether would be around $61,500. We sat down with Amber today. We'll obviously, address that issue.
Okay.
Evan, do you have anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Controller-elect pointed out, virtually the crux of our increase is the budget fall on the regular pay line. Contractual pay stays the same. Supplies stay the same. professional services that we use potentially for accounting or auditing stay the same. Conference expenses, it's primarily NYSAC, GFOA, CPEs for auditors in the director position. That's the same. And travel is the same. Virtually the entirety of our raises were salary related.
Can I just ask, just because I don't have the budget request in front of me, what's the increase of the salary of the AIC? What does it go to? What does it go from and what does it go to?
Goes from...
So as it... With the reduction as proposed right now in the executive's budget...
Yeah, just go from their executives to what the
request is. It's at 63,291. Mm-hmm. Our amendment is at 81,233.
And what was it prior to the exec's reduction due to the partial year funding?
Prior
like what was it
was
last with the staff?
67,553.
67,553.
That was the 2019 adopted.
Okay. And then can I just, and I know it's, I've asked our finance department to get the backup too, but is there an easy way to talk me through the hour changes? Because I know that the comptroller's office was at, I want to say, 35, and then went up to 40, and then moved to, there were several shifts over the course of
so
a period of time.
37 and a half.
Yeah, 37 and a half. So do you have a history of those changes?
So everyone's, unfortunately, a little bit different.
Every one of the lines, you mean? Yeah.
Every one of those positions.
So the deputy position remains 75.
Mm-hmm. When you say 75, be clear, that's for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks, yeah.
37.
Okay. The senior auditors are currently budgeted at 75. However, they've been operating an adjusted work schedule for most of this year due to savings that we've enjoyed. So they've been
working at 40 hours.
So they've been working at 40 hours, and our plan would be continue having them work at 40
when
hours.
When did they move to 37.5 from 40, and when did they move to 40 from 37.5?
We capped that savings over the summer. That was about June or July. The DAC position, depending how exactly the executive envisioned that should be a 75-hour position. That's our intent, to keep it at 75. The two other auditors, 75, technically going to 80, but they have been operating under the 40-hour.
But I'm saying, have you tracked them back several years? Because that's what I'm trying to get a handle on the history of over the course of years where these numbers have changed.
I can share with you a potentially a memo that we sent to the budget director. I believe that change happened in, that was pre-2017 adopted budget. And that had been for several years prior.
One thing I can add to that part of the conversation is just to say I would expect that I will work as staff harder than Elliot did.
And then last but not least, the administrative assistant / confidential secretary, however that may shake out, that should remain a 70-hour position.
70. And that's what's proposed in your budget change,
yep.
At a 70-hour.
Any further questions for the deputy controller or the controller-elect?
If I could just summarize, Dave, and say
sure.
That I'm putting forward things that I think are really necessary to get the job done. There's not extra fluff here. People ask me, do you want to include extra positions? No, this is what I actually think we need. I'm not giving you things that I think are on the table so that you can cut them. I'm telling you, this is what I really believe we need to get the job done. So I really appreciate you, your consideration, and I look forward to working with you. I want to be a partner of the legislature and really be here to look at the things that you think are necessary. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We could, at this point, we could either recommend those or just send the amendments to the Ways and Means.
We have them, and
yeah,
so they're part of the amendments process.
Okay.
They're already booked.
It's that case, we don't need to act.
No. Okay. And they just confirmed all the data, so we've got it in the
package.
I mean,
we could act if we wanted to and say that we recommend it, but that's just as fine just to send it forward. Alrighty.
If I have one too. This was the early version.
Doraine Whitney is here.
I was already
in response to Resolution 504, which is. We're jumping to 504 because we have people here that's going to present.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sorry that.
That's all right.
Oh, okay. Oh, good.
So 504, I'm going to jump to 504, approving a contract in excess of $50,000 for insurance department. Can you?
Yes, I'm Doreen Whitney. I'm an insurance officer. For a few years, I've been trying to get an extra, like an administrative assistant type position because we currently have three people, and we've been trying to focus more on analyzing data. Like right now, we are geared towards handling claims, and we're doing really well with it, but I'd like to use the data from the losses to try to implement some trainings, and I want to start working with safety more, DPW, anywhere where there's high risk. And so I just found out last week that my administrative assistant of 22 years is retiring next month, so I really need to get that filled, but that was already in the budget. The accountant position was something I was trying to add so that we could analyze loss experience. We're working with our insurance agent, the Reese Group, to try to figure out where the most accidents happen, the severity, the types of things that they do. But we're so tight in just keeping the claims at bay that I don't have time to get into the actual analysis of it so that we can make some changes and put some training programs in place.
So this would be done by a contract?
I was actually asking for an accountant position.
Are we talking about
this? Insurance is also on the budget review.
This isn't for a position. No, this is a contract.
This is a resolution.
NCA.
But I feel
like
she's talking budget now.
She's on the agenda for that.
Department of Budget Reviews is first on the.
Yeah, no problem.
So let's do that.
Okay. So keep going.
Please forgive me.
Yeah.
Didn't you get headcount from finance? Aren't you getting someone transferred over to the insurance?
It's going to be an accountant position. Originally, they were going to make it a risk officer, and it's been reduced. I don't think we need to have as high of a salary, so I was okay with the accountant. So the accountant is like a grade 15. It'll save about $30,000 from where I originally put in the budget.
That's not my question. My question was, did you not get an actual resource from the old ACE department transferred over to your department?
It's not happening. He's going to the health department.
Oh, okay, so it's
now
not
it's
like a help.
Right, so I thought, well, if I could at least get an accountant position, being that I'm not
going to
get that.
I thought it was going to insurance.
Yeah.
I thought it was identified as going to insurance from the get-go.
Yeah, that's what we were.
So did that change? When did that change?
I didn't know about the change. I got the same information you have, but we got it together.
We got it together,
time.
Yeah.
Is any of this in writing? Like, am I missing a documentation about a budget?
No, we're looking at the book.
You got this as in your OneDrive, like we had
what's
for all the
under,
other.
What's it called?
It's your worksheet, I believe, is what they called it.
I'll tell you in a sec.
What did you call it?
It's called a budget worksheet, I believe.
I don't have it in this. In this, not for today.
Department budgets. Let's see. I don't see insurance.
Okay.
On the third page.
All right. And which one?
I see the insurance.
And I believe it's listed as risk manager or risk officer.
May I see that?
And,
he ripped his out of there. I don't know what.
All right. Not the one for.
Yeah, it says right here, corporate compliance contract, historically housed in finance under ACE division. Now it's moving over, the contract is moving over to your budget.
The contract?
Yeah, for $36,000. what's the guy's name that was doing it? I can't remember.
Tom Gibney.
That sounds familiar.
He is the compliance officer for the county. And the original plan, I guess, was to have him come into the insurance line, but that's, from what I understand, not happening now.
When did that change?
I found out Friday.
We're going to have to. Do you need this? Can I
you
keep
can
it?
Have it.
I'll have them look into it tomorrow.
As finance chairman, I'm glad to give it.
Pardon me?
I'm glad to give it to the finance chairman.
Thank you.
All right,
how much was the person you were asking for?
For the newer line?
The allocation for the new line.
It's around 54. It goes down from 80-something.
So was that submitted as an amendment? Do you know?
I don't know. That's what I know.
Oh, wait. Okay, so I do have something here. Reassigning two positions, one being risk compliance officer to health.
Yeah, that.
Okay. Having compliance officer associated. And moving the accountant to insurance. So the health department is moving the accountant to your department.
Yes.
That's what I have here. So we do have that amendment.
That's what I understand, yeah.
Yeah.
So what is the confusion then?
Just everybody getting up to
It is submitted as an amendment, so it is here.
Okay, so they made that change,
right? And I'm trying.
And Bert just submitted it to us.
Yeah, it's very recent.
Yeah,
and so I'm just trying to say that I do need that accounting position to try to work on other projects involving training.
Is it an actual person?
We don't have anybody there.
So this was an empty headcount in health.
Yes. It was there in the budget this year, but not it was a vacant position.
So that's adding another headcount to the overall number. Was that included in the original list?
No, I mean, it was a vacant position. It existed.
Okay.
So it was always authorized and the
got it
in the budget. I would say
so. So it's already in the budget and authorized. You're just moving it into another department.
Correct, and moving the risk officer, compliance officer, to the health department. It's budget neutral. It makes more sense for a compliance officer to sit and help. And she needs another, she probably said it before I walked in, this will free Doreen up to do some further trainings. We've talked with safety, public works, the sheriff's department.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some more driver safety with NYMER.
Right, and we're meeting this week actually with the insurance agent and DPW, and we're trying to organize. You know, places where I should have been able to focus, but we haven't had the manpower to really do it. And we have a lot of data now that we've been with the comp claims with NCA for the last 5 years. Now we have real data. We can figure out where the losses are, and I really want to dig into that.
Yep.
With the potential creation of the innovation unit, the budget analysts in the legislature, finance department having quite a few financial accounting minds, the comptroller's office. Do you think you don't think you could do what you're looking to do with any of those entities? I mean, this sounds like you're describing what the innovation unit is telling us they're going to be doing around the county.
Yeah, and I don't know really. I mean, I think we could probably talk about that more. I mean, it seems to me like it would be totally integrated.
The title, there's accountants in several of the different departments. It's not a CPA position. It's almost like an account. It's just a slightly higher than account clerk position, so it does make sense. Like I, as director of purchasing, there was an accountant in the purchasing department that worked on invoices, worked on the financial system, did various things, and so
I functioned as the accountant for more than 10 years before I was, in the insurance officer. I'm still maintaining all those duties in addition to trying
sure,
to get the program.
Sure, but what you just mentioned as a job description was not what she was first explaining that this position was going to be doing. What she was explaining the position was what was going to be doing. It sounded very
actually
similar to what Tim Wiederman described he was going to be doing. So I'm just, that's...
Well, what's got to happen is every department is going to have to start taking that kind of a look at their stats, where they can make improvements, how do they address the quality of the programs delivering, how many they're delivering the programs to.
This is the innovation unit you're talking about.
This is every department's requirement. What innovation is doing is working with each of the departments to set up KPIs that make sense for their various departments based on some of the analysis they're doing to say, here's where we may have problems. So it's kind of working with them. Because it's almost a
sure.
new concept, right? It's like everybody was just kind of doing the widgets as they were going. Now we're saying, how are we doing it? How are we doing it in a way that makes sense? And are we delivering what we're committed to?
I don't, that is definitely not a new concept. Tracking tendencies and risks and things like that is something that I think we probably should have been doing more of before this time, but it's great that we're talking about it now. But what I'm asking is, are you telling me that the positions we're creating for the innovative unit, also for them to function the way I'm told they're going to function and be doing what they're going to be doing, we're going to have to be giving multiple positions, maybe accountants to more than just your department, for other departments, so that the innovative unit can then work
on
them?
I think they're already working with whatever the department
right.
is, whether it is accounting.
And their job is just to, their job is looking at our risk from accidents and things of that nature. That's their job. In other words, we try to keep those down. We're self-insured, so every accident it costs us money. So how do we stop having them accidents? And that's what they're attempting. That's what she wants to be able to do, run more of the data to find that out so we can maybe make significant changes that may reduce the claims. So maybe the innovation group could be part of that, but I mean, I think it would probably be zeroing in on that, on the people that know what they're doing the most.
That's the way I would see it.
So you're looking for another position. Then is that true?
Yeah, so I can really have them concentrate on doing.
And the budget that's in the budget, and that
yes,
the amount is
that's
what?
That's the amendment.
Yeah.
55.
The amount is 55. So this would be an added position.
Correct.
But it's in the budget.
Yeah. It's in an amendment.
It's not an amendment. It's
yeah.
already. It's
oh,
just
it's, we have a new amendment.
We
it's
have an amendment. It's
okay.
just about transferring the dollars. So the
we're actually decreasing the budget amendment is actually decreasing the insurance department because it was the risk officer, which was an $80,000 salary,
mm-hmm.
which we're moving to health.
Okay.
Again, because we talked a little bit about compliance, and as
yep.
we are able to whittle that down, we will. But they also need a lot of help on their fiscal side.
Mm-hmm.
They have a fiscal unit that they just needed to add another person to, and that's where that vacancy is set.
Yeah.
We're moving that person, the compliance officer there, and moving an accountant, which is a position that's paid less than the risk officer, to insurance.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
So $55,000 is a salary with fringe benefits. You're talking $80,000 or $90,000 a year. I'm just wondering, with the last description of going through and finding tendencies as far as pulling data to find areas that we can better protect people, set up trainings, $90,000 a year forevermore, I think initially would probably be the most productive experience when they're first taking this first look, if we haven't been looking for things like this. You don't think a firm that specializes in this kind of data analyzation that we probably pay, just my experience watching us outsource, between $20,000 and $50,000. You don't think we could do a study every 2 or 3 years, get exactly what we want to get for a lot less money, or just create a position and trust that that position is going to be
able to
do this?
We've been studying this all along, but we've never had the resources to be able to work with the data that it produced. So we do quarterly and monthly and analysis. We have, for our general liability, we're also self-insured for that. The Reese Group has a data tool, and we're actually just starting to dig into that. Like, we're starting on Thursday, actually, for the workers' comp side, which is
a lot of money too. That's like a $10 million budget. We've been producing reports even since before we went with NCA Comp. It's just that we never had a way to use the data. NCA Comp has a system where they've been able to really make some great reporting happen. They're already doing that, but I can't do much about it if I don't have a notice at hand.
Now that's the NCI Comp is the resolution.
But I mean, as far as like the whole thing, the accounting position would be working in both realms. They'd be working with the general liability. I mean, it's claims. It's all claims, and even disability claims. I mean, which are kind of minor compared to everything else. But I would envision it to be that we just look at all the types of claims, and just try to identify, you know, where the most problems are and what we can do about it.
But I think Legislator Maloney pointed out that why wouldn't you, in other words, having the same thing, you have the data, why couldn't you bring in an outside firm and pay them $40,000 for a study for 1 year and then maybe do it every 2 or 3 years? Instead of creating a position that stays there, that was his, more or less his question.
And if we have the data, I think 5 or 10 minutes ago we were under the impression that a lot of, now we're hearing we have a lot of this data. I think we thought
it's there, it's just not digested.
I still think that this, either an outside unit or somebody in-house already, this innovation unit would be taking that and deciding, compiling the data, reading it and deciding where, I see a lot of accidents here, you know, no different than the road study that we've done recently where they identify problem areas on our county roads. And our options to avoid accidents there, to avoid claims. I just don't know about $90,000 a year added to your budget line. I haven't heard enough to make me feel, though, we couldn't get exactly what we want to get with less spending less than $90,000 a year forevermore.
Bardell?
Well, one of the things we've talked about with some of the other departments is the ability, and I think this would be important, especially since you're talking about a new person, and that extra ability to do the analysis and then act on it, is tracking the savings that you realize as a result. Because that's really going to be, I think, the selling point. I don't mean for this budget cycle, because it's already contained in the budget that we see before us, but speaking as a legislator, it's hard, you know. We could go a year and then you're back, and without some way of you being able to say to us, or the department being able to say, these are some of the savings that we realized as a result of that position. I just putting it on your radar now, I think that would be really helpful.
Okay.
And I'm sure something that, you know, you'd be able to figure out how to do. And again, it informs all of us. It may be something that down the road, I mean, I've heard, it may not be so relevant to the discussion right now, but concerns about our ability to follow up on workman's comp claims and to do investigations into some of these longer-term disability claims. But that takes, I mean, that does take manpower. That takes people power.
We concentrate on the worst ones right now, but I'd like to be able to look at it more.
Right, and is that kind of what you're talking about, being able to see sort of across the whole spectrum trends and the ability to follow up and actually make change as a result of the information that you have?
Yes, with that, and also NYMER that we have as our general liability carrier, they offer free trainings, and there's pages and pages and pages of them. We were going to try to put meetings together to figure out which trainings are the most applicable and what would be the best. Last year, last year we did a thing called Drive to Survive. They have one specialized for DPW, they have Sheriff, and they have all these trainings that are there, but to figure out and target it and get it in where it needs to be, I feel like the accounting position would be really useful.
What do the trainings, the trainings are to
Some of them
reduce
are like
liability or
yeah.
reduce, yeah?
Yeah, to make you more aware. We have like chainsaw safety training, let's say, or I'm just throwing an example out there.
Yeah.
But even clerical trainings, I mean, they have every risk factor.
Right.
You know, every job class, there's a training for it. We have to figure out where we're going to aim them.
So on that front, I would just, again, urge, it's to the point of the KPIs, that you could start tracking. So if for the first time ever we implement chainsaw training, and it's this year, maybe you could track the chainsaw accidents moving from this point, and it could show that it was worthwhile to implement the training program.
Yeah.
On the outsourcing, the other day we were talking about this as it relates to corporate compliance, and I was complaining that the outsourcing of corporate compliance is shooting through the roof, and they're saying that that's just because corporate compliance is becoming a bigger thing in government. So I'm not sure that outsourcing to a study would necessarily be cheaper, but I also definitely want the follow-up to make sure that it's actually been worth it. Because your point to forever headcount is important, but I think that's on us, too, to be able to require to look back on that headcount and say, okay, is this really needed? Although I know it's harder to pull it back.
One key thing is, a lot of this work is work that Doreen is having to do currently that would free her up to look at the bigger picture, which, you know, she has a lot of years experience. If we can get the trainings to the right people, if we save one automobile accident or you know, where the two sheriff's cars hit each other, that is that cost savings right there each year in that one headcount.
Okay.
Just on the economic level.
Yeah,
not
too much.
Right. The other one last thing before you take off, Ms. Finley, is the Resolution 504. I might as well have you discuss that rather than you hanging out. On the contract with NCACOM, can you explain that contract?
You want to make a motion on
so
the resolution?
Move it.
I'll second it.
Well, no problem. I'm just going to discuss it, then we move it, but... Go ahead.
Okay, so NCACOM is a third-party administrator.
I'm easy. Go ahead.
Well, Ulster County began in 2014. We contracted with NCACOM to handle our workers' comp program. Up until then, it had been handled always in-house, claims administration, the whole thing. But so now what happens is they take the claim from start to finish. We oversee that. I have the authorization to settle anything that they want to settle. They have to go through us. They've been handling the claims, like I said, it's been 5.5 years, almost 6 years now. And they're doing a great job. And so what we are trying to do is just to revise the contract to extend it for another year. It takes a good 5 to 7 years of data when you're working with claims to even get a good picture of the statistics. So I would like to extend it just so we can get a clearer picture of how we're doing. And they have been improving their savings. We have reports on that from them already. They actually provide us with that. And that's, so that was just to extend it for another year.
Fill me in on what the amount of this contract again.
$50,000. No, that's what the...
That's the other thing that we need to discuss.
That's okay.
What is the amount of
this guy's limit, isn't it?
$564,000.
What is it?
Oh, are we looking to move to 2 year? It's 200, I want to say 232 a year.
Okay.
So 4.7.
And we had written a contract that we had 3 years and then the option to renew for the other two, and that's, this was what I was asking for.
All right, I did entertain the motion to move this for discussion, even though we were discussing it, because I was actually doing it because we were discussing the budget anyway. It's this part of the budget, but procedurally, you were correct. Legislator Appner, that I didn't move it. And I'll never do that again, all right? All right, so on this, does anyone else want to talk on that? Contract. All right. Then all those in favor of the contract?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? No. And you know what? I think, Madam Chairman, Chairwoman, whatever we call you, maybe, you know, when we have all these contracts, I mean, these resolutions, and they point out the amount in excess of, why can't we just have in what the actual number is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both. It would be both. It's in, you put in excess because that's when we need to approve it, but they should give us the
it's
number.
It's in the,
when
it's there.
It is there, but it's always at the end.
It would be great to have it in here. You're right, to have it in here.
Yeah, you're looking for it, when in reality, I'd like to see it right up front, so I know sometimes how much concern you may have to have.
Yep.
All right.
All right, thanks. But anyway, we'll talk about that in the future.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
If it has to be a policy.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Yes,
take care. Yeah, I think we can probably change
that. All right,
we have to talk to the clerks about what goes in the title of the resolution.
The county attorney sent in. All right, I got a lot to deal with here. The county attorney sent in I asked them to send something to us in reference to their increases and pointed out that there had been several years ago the first assistant county.
Sign and just do arrows.
Good.
First assistant county attorney salary was reduced by approximately $5,000. That was several years ago, and they added that back into the salary. The assistant county attorney salary that increased from approximately 65 to 73 reflects the fact that his position has been required to take on significant increases in motion practice that would have otherwise outsourced to outside counsel for higher rate. And the other assistant for the salary for the assistant county attorney from approximately $70,000 to $78,000 is a result of an anticipated vacancy in the position and the need to fill that vacancy with an experienced senior contract attorney. And that's what he sent to us as his justification.
Is that in
our OneDrive?
It should be in the... Is that in the OneDrive?
I can't find it in. I can't even show
it. It's not in there. Can you make copies of it, maybe, Jay?
Yeah.
I'll forward his email.
Okay. All right. We're not going to act on those amendments because those amendments are going to be acted on by the Ways and Means, and so we'll...
They're not amendments, Dave. They're in the budget.
They're in the budget. Okay. Well, that's his justification of the budget change.
There is an amendment? What's the amendment?
Yep.
Well, I've been here for about 2 years now, and I know that legislator John Parity and others in the past have had real issues with our county attorney's office and how often they seem to be working for only one person or one office. They're appointed, but they're supposed to be working for the entire county, and it's often that doesn't happen. We have a fairly large county attorney's office. You're always going to have one, but I think it's long overdue to have the discussion that John started years ago, and that's whether the setup should be a little more like what we have as our legislative attorneys, that you kind of have to justify what they're doing over there with an hourly justification, the same kind of setup that our attorneys have. They're not just full-timers in here running around doing what, you know, elected officials ask them to do. When you have a packet the other day, a 15-page packet that they sat on for a month before they handed it to us, I'd love to know how much time that cost the county to work against a simple policy change. It seems our county attorney's office quite often becomes not only political, but is there just to really undermine legislative policy. And I know we're probably not going to have that discussion now or this year, but it's a discussion that's long overdue and one that I think a really good legislator has tried to start before in years past.
Well, we may be able to come up with something on what the attorneys are doing and, you know, what they're spending most of their time on. I would also like to know that. That would be an interesting thing for us to understand how they're using their days so we know, get an understanding of what that actually is. But I know they deal with a lot of different issues.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think overall, I think this is an issue that we're kind of in a tough place in the legislature that I think is becoming more and more common, and I think it's from the fact that, one, the simple cost of becoming a lawyer and the cost of their education and the cost of their, you know, what their student loans are and what the competitive market is in the real world for a lawyer, you know, in the world of public service versus a lawyer in the private world. Because I sit on law enforcement and public safety, and we're having the exact, you know, same, almost identical requests or actual increases for both the public defender's office and the county attorney's office. And they all, I believe, whether it's in the county attorney's office, defender, or DA's office, you know, I give them credit for, you know, going through, you know, the incredible process of earning a law degree and, you know, turning that into, you know, a method of public service, you know, as their job, especially when there's so, we know there's so much more lucrative areas of that profession. Because I still, you know, even in my personal opinion and, you know, my professional opinion from my own career, you know, the idea that you have any attorneys making that, you know, coming in making $65,000 a year to $70,000 a year, whether it's in any agency or department in the county, is, you know, to me incredibly, incredibly low. Right. I think it's hard to argue that, and also, and I think that's what we have the issue. You know, it's especially when it's so competitive, you know, out there. So, do we want good attorneys? You know, we can't always just rely on these people's dedication to public service. They still have to live in Ulster County and raise a family, and you know, pay many of these people, individuals.
We don't expect them to get married or have
kids. Or just, you know, even afford a house in Ulster County. You know, I think, you know, it's a tough situation. I think, you know, even with these small incremental increases, I think this is an issue we're going to continue facing along through the district attorney's office, the defender's office, the county's office, and even probably eventually in our own office. You know, I just don't know what we do about it, though.
Right.
I agree on the salary issues. It's why I was fighting for the 80, some ADAs that were making $60,000 a year with 10 years of service in the county for raises that I was struggling to get votes on last year.
I voted for it.
But by the end of it, a lot of people voted for it, and that was good. And I do think that's an issue, but the issue I just brought up was we have a county attorney's office that we don't always know what they're doing. That's a different issue, what we're going to pay them as to how many attorneys we actually need over there and what we want our county attorney's office working on. And if we are going to pay these attorneys fairly in the county attorney's office, and I will say that compared with attorneys around the rest of the county attorney's office probably has made out better than any other attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it.
Yeah, not compared to the numbers.
But anyway, I'd like to move on. I mean, I don't think we're lending to this anymore.
Compared to
they presented
district attorneys.
It's in the budget, those changes. All right, it's the budget is in this change.
They go on to other things.
The changes are in the budget, so we don't need to discuss them as amendments, and the Finance, Ways and Means Committee will deal with it. We're having them here because they report to this committee. And we have one last one that for a report to the committee, the Board of Elections, and the two lovely people from the Board of Elections have come.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for coming.
Yes.
You have budget increases, and I think it's in the budget, though, right?
No.
They're not. They're amendments.
No,
okay.
Amendments. The staff amendments?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are amendments. They're not in the budget.
All right. Tell us about them.
Sure. We're asking for two entry-level clerk positions.
Guys, one meeting, please. Go ahead.
We're asking for two entry-level clerk positions. There's two pillars that I've broken them out into. I have a letter that I've drafted that's going to Ways and Means, so I can obviously give you all a copy of it. There's two big things. It's not just the election season issues, which have
expanded all year
by 900%. Huh?
Isn't that all year long now?
Essentially, yes, it is. Next year, for example, we're going from 3 days of voting that we would have to now 30 days of voting. We just went through our first early voting period, which was very successful compared to other counties statewide. We did over 6% statewide average of 1.9. So there is an appetite for voting in Ulster that we've seen expand over the last couple of years. Our turnout is higher, our voter engagement is higher, our enrollment is the highest that it's ever been at 118,000. The voters are very engaged. We deal with massive amounts of FOIL requests, massive amounts of requests all year round from voters, and now with early voting, we love it. We loved our experience with it, but it is an election day every day for 9 days, and then one day of turnaround, which is excruciatingly hard for the staff to accomplish. I don't get comp time. The staff does. They have amassed on average 18 days of comp time this year. That's almost 1 month of work. I don't know when they're going to take it. There's hardly any downtime. They're all at their total max out. Their mental right now is why we're late. We just breathlessly ran over here from counting ballots. But it's not just those periods of time. The state has changed our registration. They've expanded it to include a lot more hands-on work for the clerks. Anytime someone does a transaction at DMV, regardless of whether or not they want it sent to the board, it gets sent to the board. We get, on average, 200 requests a week. They all have to be researched fully, not just through our system, but also through the state voter registration database, because the state has expanded registration to cross county lines. So it is incredibly time intensive. This is not just comp time that they earn during election season. This is comp time that they earn when you don't even think about elections. In August and September, when they try to take their vacation time, we had a huge backlog because one person was out. We don't have enough people. We're drowning. That's just the bare bones of it. And I don't know how we're going to get through 2020 when 90% of the electorate is going to want to not just make sure that they're registered, but then to ultimately vote in all of these election events that we have coming up. We're not going to make it work. It's going to be in the form of part-time help, which for us, we have some people that just retired. That's who we bring back, because this is not just something that I can hand to an election inspector and say, do this. You have to get trained in our software. You have to get trained in our processes. And anything that someone does on the Dem side or the Republican side has to be audited by a person of the opposite party. So it's not just a one-person fix. It's a two-person fix. Everything we do is in that bipartisan fashion. And that's the gist of it. So if you have any questions, please feel free. I can only speak for myself.
Can you just explain the things that are coming from DMV, what those 200 things a day are?
These are address transfers. So it's essentially voters' information, or non-voter. It could be anybody. We get people that are under 18. We get 12-year-olds.
You're saying every transaction that happens at DMV?
That happens at DMV comes to our office.
So I go in to renew a registration or whatever.
This has been a two-year thing since 2017. They've enforced this on us. It's part of HABA that they never enforced. They got sued, the state did, and then they filtered it down to the counties. Anything that someone does at DMV, we get. That's if you're getting an ID card for your child so that they can go to Canada. Now with everybody needing these special enhanced driver's licenses to go on an airplane, we get all that data. And if they're 18 or if they're going to be able to be pre-registered and they're not in our system, we also have to send them a registration form. So that's why our postal budget has gone up.
But you're saying you get that even if they're 65
we or get everybody.
82.
A title change we get. Somebody changed their title. I have examples of people changing their title to somebody else. We get the form. The person's been dead for a decade. And we're supposed to now take action on it. It's insane. We have begged the state, all of the commissioners across the state have begged the DMV to put filters on their back-end software, and they have not listened to us for 2 years. And it is something that the state board we've complained to. We go to our conferences every 6 months.
Sounds like memorializing.
Nobody does anything.
Well, we had this conversation, and that's exactly, I said, this is an issue we've got to address first thing next year.
Yeah.
Because this is crazy.
But in the meantime, it's everything falls on us. And I have six people that are qualified to do it. The deputies jump in. I jump in because I know how to do it, and that's it.
To give you another example, we will have somebody where we're processing a piece of mail that's returned or something that comes in from the DMV. We can see when this voter was last touched in our system. Sometimes we're taking somebody who was processed a week ago and reprocessing that as a duplicate, but we're required to do that. I mean, it's really terribly inefficient, but we're required to handle each one as a separate transaction and fully research it.
And it's a state system, so it's not a local issue for us. It is everywhere. Yeah.
Ashley, how do you research it?
So So we have our own system that's Ulster County based, so we look them up that way. But then now with the expansion to the cross county, we also have the New York State Voter Registration Database, and we also look them up on that to make sure that they're not touching up against another county that they're registered in.
After you do the research and you find out I don't need to take an action, what do you do?
We send them a registration form.
Even if it's a title change?
Yes.
Yeah, we have to.
We're required.
Everybody gets one.
Unless you're if you're under 16.
Obviously.
Yeah. And if they don't have all the required information to be registered, we're required to send them a letter saying you didn't have all the information.
Have
for
you
us
you've
to
been tracking
registered.
This data now for 2 years?
Yes.
Because this is and so what have your numbers look like over
it's
the
jumped up incredibly. In 2017, that was the last year we didn't have to do it. Out of DMV, we processed 2,692 forms. In 2018, that jumped to 10,776, and this year we've done 6,521. That's without factoring in October and November, when we get this month. It'll be about what it was last year.
Do you mean you process new registrations? Is that what a
no.
form is?
They
or
touch
just
through our system.
Just touch your system.
And that's just the ones that are registered.
Okay, the
registered. Those are just the registered voters. That doesn't count all of the ones that are not that we have to send forms to. We actually only keep that in a physical form because they can't get entered into
so
the
every
system.
One of those.
And that has expanded. We've had to spread it out to the two different file cabinets.
But right now you're sitting, you've got about a little over 6,000. So right now you have.
A little over 2,000. A little less than 3,000 used to be.
Okay.
Jump to 10.
All right, so in other words, all 10 of those you had to send a letter about.
We had to take action on. So the 10,000 are actual voters. So we updated their addresses. We updated their DMV ID numbers. Those are actual changes in our system. There's more forms that we've gone through that are not in our system because they're either not registered and then they got registration forms, so they might be in a mail bucket now as being a new registrant. You can see, too, in trends on our new registration have gone up. Could be because we're sending registration forms to all these people.
Yeah.
But it also could be that the appetite for voting also has gone up.
Right,
I wish
so
I could have prepared
you
more,
have amendments in there for
the
two positions, and is that correct? Is it two part-time positions?
Yeah. Full-time.
But they're
well,
entry
it's one
level.
For each side.
They're entry level.
Right, one for each side.
Yeah.
What's the salary request? I know we're going to see it probably tomorrow or whatever. What's
48.
Is it? 48?
Yes. That's our lowest level.
Yes.
Can I ask a quick question because this didn't come to us as a request?
It did not.
Can you use any HAVA money? Is there revenue that's possibly...
Not for staff.
You can't use it for staff.
No,
okay. All right.
The reason it's full-time is because it is very time-intensive to learn the job. I can't just pull somebody off the street and expect them to know how to do everything that my clerks do. They're very highly skilled in what they do. It takes, I would say, 2 years to figure out how to do everything that our office requires by law. You can see it now. There's so much work that little mistakes have rendered people's votes challenged because there's issues in their voter record which should have been caught but haven't because they don't have enough time to look through everything that the way that they need to.
And I will say, Ashley and I spoke about this, and I said, can you get creative? Is there any way that you just increase your contract line? Or overtime, but when we started talking about the comp time that her clerks are already getting, it seemed, and the training required to even do contractual.
Have you done a simple breakdown of comp time and when? I mean, I know it's going to be higher during election time, but it would probably help us to see, and it would be a lot easier to justify the full-time position and not going the part-time route with retirees. From the Board of Elections during peak times, if there was a consistent number of comp hours being produced throughout the year, I think that would speak to, like I said, justifying the full-time year-round position rather than sticking to times, it seems.
When it's election season.
Yeah, I mean, if it was 95% of the comp time was during one or two different periods during the year, I think the conversation would probably be, why don't we go the retired Board of Election worker route give you more of a budget for that, but if it is pretty consistent throughout the year.
We already use them now, so I don't have enough retirees to bring back. They're in the office.
But if it is, but really, if guys, if it is, if 90% of the and I'm not saying they are, but if it is during a 1 or 2 month span, then it is, then it would make me worry that you're going to have this person and you will have downtime in certain other parts of the year, though this other issue, if it's not resolved, is it sure gives you year-round, a little extra year-round work.
Because I think we can pull that out of time force.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
I bet we could pull that here.
I can't see when they got it.
Right.
We'll check with Amber and see if she can.
If she can pull it.
So this is only going to show for what's happened up until now, but starting in 2020, they have an extra, even 20 election days on top of, because of early voting.
And this year is going to
have
this year was an easy year.
It's not going to show up.
But it's adding to the
still going to be rushed.
I just think we should get data.
Two primaries no longer run from noon to 9. They're now 6 a.m.
Can you request that Natalie or Amber pull those?
They can't access Time Force.
No, we can't.
We can. Yeah, Jim's asked them to do that.
Yeah, no.
Marvin from the committee.
Send that along.
Jim, can I get one follow-up?
Yep.
At what point, Ashley, will your staff increases be too large for the building you're in?
Well, that's a... Our building is being sold.
Yes.
So
no matter what, we're moving.
I don't know what is going to happen to us. We might have to move next year.
You will.
I don't know where we're going to go. We'll be homeless.
We got room on the third floor.
You can still vote if
we're
going to
work on.
We got a couple of
assurances
that we're working on.
We got some vans we can bring down by the river.
It's a good SNL skit waiting to be written. Yeah, I don't know where we'll be.
That'll get handled.
Thank you for coming in.
I have a constituent that is a poll worker, and I've been getting a lot of texts from her. Were the checks sent out? I get these texts.
No, the checks. The
I get texts her back. Yeah. She said she thought it was Friday.
Because of the recount right now, everybody has. I mean, we worked this weekend. The vouchers have been. Put on hold.
That's fine. I can just give her accurate information, which is all I can do.
We're thinking more around Christmas time.
Okay.
I don't know when we're going to work on them. Unless I bring them in.
Christmas bonus.
So, needless to say, it's been a very challenging year. Multiple elections, early voting, all the new changes.
It's a lot. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. The voters love it. They love the new technology.
It was great, I have to say. It was easy.
Yeah.
Well,
early voting.
We love it too. I love early voting. I think the voters.
More than anybody else, I think.
I did
enjoy the experience.
That's
like
Chicago.
It's a lot more convenient. I think it will increase our turnout a couple of points. It already did increase it from 15 and 17. So. And we also were number 2 in the state.
I was
so.
Going to
Yeah, great.
Well, thank you for coming. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Why don't you go home and relax, have a glass of wine.
I'm Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
I'll even buy you one. I'll send a bottle over.
And did anything in Saugerties change?
In Saugerties?
No.
We should talk about that.
Yeah.
It went down a
total
vote.
Yeah, we
Yeah.
There's 10 set aside. Next. Alrighty, we have no said. Now we are back to the resolution.
Oh, okay.
I got it. Here, you want to staple them and hand them out? Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Alright, resolution 411.
Move it.
Alrighty. This is a public hearing on the various sections of the charter in reference to changing the legislature to 21 members from 23. All right, on the resolution. Any discussion? Go ahead.
I'm not prepared to be a yes on this in a final vote, but I've enjoyed the discussion on it. I definitely think it's something that needs to continue to be discussed. That's why I'm open to it going to public hearing. I'll support it tonight for public hearing. But I just do want to point out that, you know, this is not something we need to rush into. This is something that would need to be decided before, I believe, August of next year. Maybe even later, but at least by August. So I'm willing to continue to have that conversation. I'm willing to, you know, have the public hearing. But I still hold some reservations just based on uncertainties, as we get further along the process in this. But tonight will be a yes.
Alrighty, anyone else? Yep.
Yeah, I'll just give it a quick spiel because I'm one of the ones that put it forth. I think that legislatures and bodies like ours in general are built, and certainly this one and every other one in the state is built around the two-thirds model. So when you can be at an exactly two-thirds, it makes a lot of sense. It's a much cleaner number. If you play it out over, like I said, a 10 or 20-year period, you're going to have several more veto overrides. I had a conversation with a couple of legislators and legislative staff today about different resolutions, and I kept hearing that that there might be votes wavering because we're not reaching a veto-proof number. So we might be able to get to 12 or 13, but there are people that are actually use it as a reason. I don't know. It's not veto-proof anyways. So they don't want to be on the record for something that might be getting overturned. So they're going to go possibly piss the executive off when the executive's just going to veto it and you're not going to get that anyways. So the veto number matters. It's two-thirds. The fact that we are not at a clean two-thirds number. So there's two discussions that I think should start to happen in the legislature. One is cleaning up the number we have and making it a two-thirds number. The other one is whether you want to go further. That further discussion may need to happen next year, may need to happen in 10 years. But this is a better number. The other big reason for me to reduce the size of the legislature is executive power. Anybody that is involved in politics anywhere in this state, I think, should probably probably struggles at times with how powerful our executives have gotten. 20, 30, 40 years ago in this state, the legislature was really able to check the governor. That is over. The entire legislature, or the assembly or state senate, does not equal 1% of the power our governor has. And it's a problem. It's something that we should always look at when we're crafting policy or coming up with a number of different things. How does this, is this, are we creating proper checks and balances? So to reduce the size of the legislature empowers the single legislator. And I think that an empowered legislature would be a healthy thing for this county, because this charter that we created, I think, if anything, if you're having an honest conversation, you're going to acknowledge we went heavy executive power. And there's times we feel that. I don't always think it's productive. So I like the 21 number. I think it makes a lot of sense. And it's a pretty minor change in the scheme of things. And if you are going to have that second discussion about a much smaller legislature down the road, I think going from 23 to 21 and evaluating that slight change first might be the way to go about that. I hope people really consider this, because I really think it's a better number than we have now.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything Jonathan said and most of what Joe just said. I think that the two-thirds, the easily divisible, makes sense to me. My hesitation, I'll vote on it today to have the public hearing. My hesitation is I'd like to have that discussion about the potential of a further reduction, not in the abstract. I'd like to find some way to work out what it would look like if we went to 15, what that might play out in terms of the numbers, the districts, just even looking at a map and how that... I feel like we should do the due diligence of having the conversation of the smaller size versus doing the incremental.
that has that job. I don't know if legislators should be thinking too much about how it's going to affect their legislative district before.
No, I'm talking about 15 versus 21.
Oh.
I'm not talking about how, I'm not talking about drawing lines. That's not our job. I'm talking about moving to 15 versus 21 because I worry about doing things in, okay, let's just go by two and then 4 years later, let's take off four more and these incremental steps. I mean, I'd like to have the full conversation about all, but I'm willing to move it for a public hearing to see what people have to say about
it. Well, I think, I mean, I'm one of the co-sponsors of this, and of course, I mean, I've introduced this in the past. And I know at one point I was against it when it was offered by Chairman Wad Knowles. And the reason I was against it at that time was the timing. It would have forced us into a redistricting in the middle of a census, which means you would be redistricting for 5 years and then redistricting it. So in other words, you'd have three redistricting within, you know, 15 years. And I felt that that was wrong, but I accepted the reason, of, you know, the reasoning behind the 21. And in fact, when we created the reductions of the legislature, I was one of the drivers behind that. And one of the points that I was trying to do was get to the 21 then. But we ended up compromising, and sometimes we compromise on things, you know, for the sake of getting something accomplished, but it's not always the best thing to do. And I agree, and I think the number 21 makes it so it's not a change that makes it so much that it changes the nature of the campaign or changes the nature of our relationship. 15 would change the nature, I think, of the campaign, but we can check that out. There is one computer left down in the planning board that does have the software that was left from the last redistricting. We checked with Dennis, so we may be able to actually run some numbers through it if you kind of want. I know some people were concerned, well, what happens with the new districts? Well, they're going to be changed regardless if it was 23 or 21. I predict that Saugerties will probably may gain, because Saugerties is probably the fastest growing, I don't know, town in the county. I don't know. I think size-wise, they've been growing quite, you know,
population-wise.
Yeah, that's what it meant. I mean, they're growing in population, so therefore they may be able, in other words, it's going to be a shift, you know, once the census is done. So we really can't figure out what that shift is going to be. I mean, we can speculate, but I think the rest of you, I do appreciate that we move this forward, and I think we get some input from the public on this, because as you pointed out, Legislator Hepner, we have time. So if we even change this, we have the time to change it. So it's a good time to get input. So on this resolution, it was moved and seconded. Any further discussion? I'd like to call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
And I oppose? None. Gary. Now, resolution 444.
Move it.
And we're ready. Seconded.
Seconded.
This is to include mandatory food scrap composting by large generators. And the sponsor of this is out here.
Legislator Green.
Legislator Green. Yeah.
Are you prepared to talk on it?
I can speak on it.
Yeah, okay. I'd like to have somebody explain a little bit. I mean,
Jonathan's on the committee as well.
Now, this came out of the committee. It passed the committee?
Yeah, we had a public hearing on that last month.
Right. Oh, okay. So now we're actually voting. Oh, I'm sorry. I got confused on this one. We're actually voting on it then, right?
We are.
Oh, okay. Well, on the issue. Anybody wish to speak on the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I know there was further discussion that came up this afternoon.
I can't
pretend to be totally caught up on. That I just noticed when I opened up my laptop. You know, essentially this is building upon what's already a newly existing state law. It just essentially, in terms of requirements, you know, takes the legislature and takes Ulster County a little bit more, I wouldn't say strict, but higher standards for the level in which
extensive
coverage is a good way to put it, in terms of mandated food scrap composting. But I think, I don't know if council wants to talk a little bit further.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, if the councilor could fill us in on, you rendered an opinion.
Yeah, my second opinion, but more importantly, the county attorney had issued an opinion as well, and that prompted me to rethink my opinion and to expand on it a little bit more. Just on the legal side, the county attorney looked at a number of the factors involved in sort of the text of the law. And because, to back up, the state law, the state food scraps law, does not mention preemption. The critical legal question, for those of you who hadn't followed this, is whether or not the state law preempts the county law. When a state regulates in an area that it intends to preempt any local activity, any local legislation, the municipality can't legislate. An example might be, for example, pesticides, things like that. Once a state has a pesticide law, then the town can't go ahead with pesticide registration requirements. And so sometimes state law says that we're going to preempt, as in pesticides, for example, the ECO. Sometimes it doesn't, and even sometimes when it doesn't, the courts will look at a local law and say that's going too far to infringe on an area that really should have been, kept with the state. And the county attorney looked at some of those mechanisms that the states use, which is certain things in the text of the law. But in my view, it missed other and found, looking at those mechanisms, in its opinion, that that those clues did lead toward a vision of preemption. But in my view, it missed other clues, and arguably more important ones. The stated intent of the law, for example, not relating to preemption. But what's the state law trying to do here? To be specific, the local law simply regulates entities that the state doesn't regulate. The state, for example, require food scraps to be separated and composted or otherwise reused, donated, instead of being thrown out. So our law would reach other entities that the state doesn't reach. Smaller entities, for example. The state has to be 2 tons a week or more. We're going to go lower than that. We're going to reach some of the hospitals and the schools, things like that. And so the question is, does the state have a concern? Is there a legitimate concern for uniformity? Like in pesticides, for example, you don't want different registration rules, different labeling rules for different towns. That would just be unworkable. Do we need different? Can we survive with different standards for who is covered? Could Ulster County have a stricter composting rule than another county, than statewide? And I looked at some of that, and looking at those factors, it looks like, to me, it's not 100% clear, because this is never 100% clear, that there's a very, very substantial argument. This county, all the counties actually, we handle waste, either through our towns, through the county, or through the RRA. It's our job. We have a role in regulating how waste is handled. If we want to take steps to limit the amount of MSW that we've got to send out to Seneca Meadows, that would be a reasonable argument that would say that we have a role in this. Anyway, those two memos are out there right now, and they provide.
It hasn't really changed that much, though. The debate hasn't changed that much.
It's just more specifically detailed data.
Well, again, the county.
Have we requested the state their opinion on whether this law would be violating?
I called DEC at various times. I've got no answer from them, and that's not a surprise to me. That very few state officials are going to be willing to step out on an area like this where the courts can go either way, that they'd be exposing themselves. Mm-hmm. So DEC counsel never got back to us, is the bottom line on that.
Do you think you'd get an opinion from a different entity? I mean, even the state AG's office now, that DEC would be it.
AG wouldn't comment.
I don't think we'd get. We could try. It would take a long time, and I don't think we'd get anything. It's just, there's no, the standards are too, you'd be predicting, I mean, we could.
When did the county attorney's office issue this memo? What was the date?
I believe it was August.
August.
You have it up?
August 20th.
August 20th.
Yeah. Did we get it in August?
Yeah, I think so.
I know we talked about it.
September, August, we had it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It didn't seem like any of was the stuff you being more, you being more.
Well, I had what happened, I had this impression that I've explained before, but I didn't put it in writing until this week. And in fact, it was the discussion in the Environment Committee, where I believe it was the Deputy County Executive again raised the issue of the County Attorney's memo. And I said, I have some questions on that, and I'll provide that. I'll provide my
Which County Attorney put forth the memo? Do we know who worked on it?
Yeah, it was ultimately signed by Clint, but it was originally drafted back over the summer by Jennifer. It was basically verbatim.
What's her back? What's Jennifer's background? Does she have a background in? Is your background in topics such as these?
I have a background in environmental work. No, Jennifer's done a lot of.
I know you do. She's got a similar background.
Jennifer, I think has pretty good knowledge of preemption issues.
Has anyone talked to the executive about this?
A couple of us have got our hands up.
I'm sorry. I'm letting him talk, and then Joe, you're kind of butting in there for a little bit. But he was engaging with some questions that I would have liked to ask myself. But I mean, he was asking him. Go ahead. I'm Tracy. You with it? And
yeah, I was just going to say, after reading David's memo, it just confirms my confidence in moving forward. I was relatively confident prior, but now I have much more confidence after reading this document. And I know that Legislator Green is confident moving forward, and she did an incredible job in terms of public outreach. And the memo even notes that there hasn't been an outcry of opposition, not at the public hearings, not at the various points of outreach. And she has gone to great lengths to include all the sectors that would be affected. Incidentally, the state legislation, if we pass this, Ulster County's legislation will come on board first. The state's legislation would follow, and Ulster County would be removed from dealing with what's covered by the state, and we would just be dealing with the portion of the law that's specific to the county. One of the things, we have come into play, and we have regulated both in schools and hospitals before on polystyrene foam. It's applicable in both those places, and we had long debate about it. So, I think we're on good ground to move forward. I feel really confident. Again, I just want to stress my support of all the work that Legislator Green and the Environmental Committee and the various subcommittees and working groups did in getting everyone to the table and having multiple forums to work through this, not just the public hearings, but forums in the chambers, inviting everyone who would be affected.
Yeah, first I just want to build upon what Chairman Bartel said in commending Legislator Green for the public outreach that came to this legislation bill, which I believe, too, I give her credit for the timing, which I believe it smartly acts at a time when the state's already acting, but going, I think, appropriately further to make Ulster County a leader right out of the gate. Just to speak, I attended the stakeholder meeting that Legislator Green had to discuss this legislation. I'm not talking a public hearing or anything, but I was amazed when I walked into the number of stakeholders that participated, including, from national corporate at Hannaford, Skyped in, representatives from HealthQuest, large-scale catering companies. I mean, just to give an idea of, the participation and the robust discussion that occurred, and even action items that I believe did occur in terms of additional meetings with HealthQuest to ensure, because obviously in a facility like theirs, in terms of requirements are different than, a large-scale catering company, or so on, in terms of sanitation and all that. So I think, I definitely give credit. And I think, again, I'm on the Solid Waste Management Commission. We've been talking a lot about, I've never thought in a single year I'd talk so much about waste or learn so much about waste, to whether I wanted to or not. But I mean, the amount we've had experts come in to speak with us, we've had, you know, who I think are talented consultants, and there's been an extensive conversation about composting. It's just, you know, it's what the future is, an aggressive approach to composting. I think that is, you know, almost a guaranteed part of the future in how we handle waste management. And further, I mean, you've already seen it in our own resource and recovery agency, their board and Tim's credit, and working, you know, with the Department of Environment as well. Already the investments our resource and recovery agency have already began in the last year or so to make an expanding composting. So I think this is appropriate. I don't think it's an overreach. I feel confident in council's opinion strongly, and you know, I believe that if the state wants to come to us because they don't believe we should go further, or as I think legislator Nolan more properly said, be more expansive and approaching composting, if the state has a problem with that, I think that's a very reasonable issue for us to stand up and say, no, I believe we can be expansive and
Dave,
address it.
Dave's right here.
He's right there. So I'm just saying, even in that scenario where the state comes to us and says, hey, we don't think you guys have a right to be more expansive, or, you know, and even if it was, you know, came from a private entity, I feel confident and I also just morally believe it's a discourse that we should rightfully have.
Well, when I'm looking at this, and I mean, I am not, and I have to default to everyone else on this because it's not an issue I've been looking at and really keeping an eye on. So I'm lacking in that. But when I read through the county attorney's opinion and I see some serious, you know, a number, you know, with about the preemption and the idea of the hospitals and the nursing homes and the schools and, you know, the schools having to start doing this. In other words, I can't imagine the, you know, what an imposition this would be on the city school district. You know, and that's what, you know, I have to look at those things as, you know, protecting my constituents also. But I certainly support the concept of the composting, but my concern is that. And my concern also is the idea that how do we tell a city school district that we have to do that when some of the state law sort of indicates that we can't? And so, Dave, could you address that?
Yeah. Just for everybody's knowledge, there are two separate sort of general sets of theories of preemption. One is that the state law, because the state has a food waste law, that it just preempts anything that we do beyond the state, that we have no ability. And that's what most of the memo is about. And that would involve schools and everything else. But Clint also has a separate section that says there are certain categories of entities, including schools, that are even specially preempted because the state has... the state regulates schools in a separate body of law, and the state regulates hospitals in a separate body of law, and so we can't even touch that. That may be what you're alluding to. The simple answer is this. What under the preemption rules, if we were to go ahead and regulate schools, you know, textbooks, regulate hospitals, you know, how much, you know, alcohol you have to use to clean something, we'd have no chance whatsoever. But this would be considered, at least in that context, a collateral regulation. And to give a sense for what we're talking about, remember a couple of years back there was a big argument about fracking, right? Could towns, you know, fracking is completely preempted by the state. It's oil and gas extraction. Towns cannot regulate it at all. But there were towns that actually zoned it out completely. No fracking in this town. And it went up through the courts. And the courts ruled that you can do that because it's a law of general application, so it's incidental. And that's here. We're regulating food waste, we're regulating garbage, yeah. And so it would be an incidental impact on the hospitals, and that would be the answer to that. As far as the one with the, on the substance, we haven't seen the school district come forward and say anything. That's a problem.
And they've been reached out to. Well,
and you, schools, look, there are schools that have gardens now, right?
So gardens
and things like that. They can't use, to use your pesticide argument, you can tell a school not to use a pesticide or a county, you know, bags or it's not specific to the school.
But we're pimped on pesticides. The state's not going to
No, but I was just going with an analogy okay. that you use. You wouldn't be regulating the school. You're regulating pesticides.
If you will have to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and to that point, again, you know, we have countywide recycling laws that are applicable to hospitals and schools. We have
but they don't follow.
We have the polystyrene law, which is applicable to hospitals and schools. And in terms of the burden, you talked about the burden on Kingston City Schools. I feel so strongly and passionately that we need to look at this, and MANA has totally led on this issue, that we need to look at this not as a burden but as an opportunity. We're talking about changing future generations at the source with kids who are going to go home and educate their parents. And what the tours of the, you know, the Solid Waste Commission, I wasn't able to go that day, but I've been another day, that went to the college, SUNY New Paltz, to see their composting facility. They went to where Laura runs an amazing facility, and they saw change in action. And you're talking about college kids who come in not knowing the first thing about composting, and that's a very fluid and fast-moving system. I mean, they learn in a matter of days that, okay, all it takes is to scrape this over here, and then this happens. And the other thing that we've seen just in models of this kind of legislation in other places like Vermont, places like Connecticut, is that there's an economy of scale. As this ramps up or down, you're thinking of it the reverse, it starts with the biggest generators and then moves down to smaller generators, there becomes more opportunity and the cost goes down. I think what MANA's envisioned here and bringing everyone to the table throughout the process, this has taken months and months and months. It's been a slow work where she's gone back to the table. When people said, okay, well, we need to work on this, she said, okay, we're going to have another meeting and we're going to talk about this. And she's worked through all those issues, and really, Jonathan said it best, we have a chance to lead here in such a substantial way that it will, I think, have massive impacts for long-term generations, both on our waste generation, but on how we do things at home. Our kids are going to come home and say, that's not garbage, that's compost. And we're not regulating residences, but we're going to see the effect of it through this legislation, which isn't going to happen overnight. It's a slow ramp-up, so I'm so proud of what MANA's put before us.
I hope we can all get behind it.
I will say, look, I'm for it, but I do think that it's another small thing where we need to go. We're not going to get there this way, ultimately. At the end, I saw there is a regulatory aspect to this, and we're already not properly enforcing and regulating other laws we have on the books now. So I worry about that, but all these things we want to do, this and a million other things, we can do them all by raising the tipping fee. You get all the composting in the world that you want. Much
you still
quicker.
Have to have a...
But, you know...
Still have to have an
yeah, but Joe, this helps to make the infrastructure happen.
We can't ban our way and demand our way to where we need to go. Tipping fee does it all. And if we really wanted to be innovative and lead the way, we'd be talking about the
increasing tipping fee.
Yeah, yep. The RA has a hearing on the Solid Waste Management Plan tomorrow.
And what are we going to go to from a dollar? I'm not talking about a dollar or two.
Yeah. All right. Any further discussion? I mean, I have some reservations because of my concerns with the implementation of it and the ability of these places actually to do it. But on the other hand, Mike, I also have concerns with where we're going as a society and as a world in general. We need to deal with these issues, and the only way, the best way to deal with them is at home and then let them spread out. So,
just as you mentioned the schools, I believe in the discussions that the schools all were
contacted, the school
they
boards?
They were contacted. I don't know how many
participated.
Knowing the way school systems work.
No, I don't think they could, but they were contacted.
Okay, whatever you're doing, and all of a sudden when they get it, they're going to say, what the hell are you people doing?
It's going to take an education process,
Yeah.
I forgot which one.
But I mean, you see that, you go into schools and most of the schools don't even do recycling. Not very effective, but anyway. All right, any further discussion on this? All righty, then entertain the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I'm opposed. Come on. All right.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah, start eating all those leftovers. No throwing out.
You're my son.
All right, increasing the salary and hours of the Commissioner of Social Services. Wait, I think this is the 19th time I've looked at this.
Yeah, it seems like it.
All right, any discussion on it? I think we've discussed this to the death and back, and I think I got knocked down, picked up, brought back up again. The horse has been there. Again, I will reiterate a complaint that I believe not only I have, but Legislator Bartels has the same complaint, and so does Legislator Maloney. The idea of increasing someone's pay by just saying we're going to make them go from 35 to 40 hours, particularly when you're dealing with a salaried person, it's kind of deceptive. But on the other hand, I understand, what he's doing, and so.
He always returns your calls, right?
Oh, yeah. He's returned calls at night, so, I have to say, the guy does his job.
Mike does a good job.
It was entertain a vote on it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None? And we're putting Joe, you're going to go from, we're knocking you down from the 40 to the 12 hours. We want you to relax.
Well, go back in the records.
Okay, the Electrical Licensing Board, Resolution 446.
For the 20th time?
For the 20th time.
We'll move it.
Okay. All right, on the issue, do we have any discussions on this issue?
I just had questions. I know Kevin and I know Tracy had been involved in this quite a bit, and you've talked to a lot of those individuals, a couple of them that have reached out. Have we quelled any of their concerns?
Jay can speak. We had the clerk's office reached out to the gentleman from Saugerties who wanted to make sure that he was okay.
He was exempt. And all
my understanding is he's
comfortable.
Confident
right,
and comfortable with the answer. And that he was directly called and they walked
good.
Through the whole thing. Mark?
This also just amends the already existing law that will go into effect January 1st and makes it eases some of the. It makes it a better law. So even if it didn't fix the gentleman from Socrates's, it not passing this amendment wouldn't help that either.
But I do just want. I want to thank the legislative clerk's office for that. I thanked Vicki directly just because when someone comes before the legislature with a very specific concern about their own livelihood and I don't have the answer to the question, I want to make sure on behalf of all of us that the gentleman's concerns were answered and at least that he had a clear answer. And my understanding is he feels good about that.
All right. It was moved and seconded. I'd like to entertain anybody. Well, before I go on, anyone else would like to speak on the issue?
Yeah, I just got one comment on it. One of my concerns was the time frame to implement this. The law doesn't take effect until January 1. At that point, you have to appoint a board, and the board won't even be in place when people are going to start wanting to apply. And it just the timeline on this makes no sense at all. We should have had a longer timeline to get this set up, but it is what it is, and we're going to have to work on that. If you need help, let us know, and we'll make sure we can amend this.
The Public Works department will be working through December to make sure that starting January 1st, if January 1st we have to put the board together and place that day, we will, and then since county offices are closed on the 1st. But
the board has to be approved by the legislature, am I correct?
I'd have to double check the law on that. I don't think it's subject to confirmation.
I don't think it is either.
I don't remember it being subject to confirmation.
It has to meet the requirements of being electricians and there's requirements that it definitely has to meet.
There's somebody from each
very stringent requirements that they have to meet.
And if people reach out to you all and are interested in being on
the board, one guy is great. That one guy spoke at public comment. Sounded like a great candidate.
He has to be considered. Good. And we have one other.
Who was he?
I don't remember his name, but
from Rosendale?
If you could find his name, forward that to the county executive.
He's an inspector, right?
Yeah. He's
all right. Anyway, I entertain a motion on this. Entertain the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. All right, a local law improving and strengthening the sustainable energy loan program.
Move it.
Second.
I moved and seconded. Discussion. I know Matt has been working on this one also, and part of this, the reasoning at this is we have not had people jumping on for these loans, and a lot of it had to do with because of they were so narrowly defined, and this opens up the definition, and hopefully this would help bring about more of these loans to for sustainable energy. No other discussion.
Let's see if we can make it work.
Call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Resolution 448, a local law on the Ulster County Ethics Law. All right,
Move it.
Second.
You can't move it.
No, I was asking you to move.
Seconded. All right. We have had.
Tracy? Okay.
I let that in the car. All right. I was quite concerned with the one that I received from the county attorney in reference to actually it. It referenced the case with Bud Slater Baloney, in fact, in that case, and claimed that we were driven by that.
Which county attorney?
We were using that.
That was removed.
Some of the problem that we were concerned with.
To write it.
He indicated in the memo who actually wrote it.
Yes.
Jen Clark. This is a different Jen, right?
Same one.
This is the same one that wrote the memo against the
Clint
signed off on it. And but I'm asking about the attorney that wrote that 15-page memo that went after me, that was sat on for a month. It seemed they had given it out to other entities in the county but us, and then decided to give it to us at the final hour. And it was 15 pages to basically talk down the idea of having ultimately what this piece of legislation.
Yes, yes, to some degree I agree with you, but there are some things that look like they can be adjusted, and that was my concern when I actually read through some of it. Yes. Some of it aggravated me because of the way it was written, and I thought it was totally inappropriate by indicating that we were attempting to make the law easier on ourselves, which was total bull. I found that quite insulting in many ways, because the only thing we actually did with the lessening of was the idea that we lessened the idea that you couldn't do the pile-on, where one issue. And then, of course, now we have the Supreme Court decision from Judge Mott in reference to
the arbitrary and capricious manner in which the present ethics board acted. And it, you know, it's pretty telling with their decision. And if so, this indicates to me that the present system is open for abuse, and it was abused. That's my opinion. It was abused. And I actually have a press release tomorrow explaining that abuse. But anyway, I see this, that we do need to make a change. But I'm after having a discussion with the county executive today, I understand that he also feels there needs to be changes. So he basically was not totally against the idea of making these changes. So I'd like to work with him on getting the changes to make them more, in other words, actually creating a stronger ethics board that cannot be used and abused the way this last one was. That's my opinion, obviously. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to offer or entertain a motion to postpone this to a special meeting to be scheduled shortly, not tomorrow, but within a couple weeks, so we could actually sit down and hammer this piece out a little piece by looking at the decisions. Dave rendered a decision, as did the county attorney. And then I'd also like to have somebody from the executive's office being involved in that. And because I want a better law, that's what I want. I want a better law that can't be abused the way the last one was. So I'd entertain that motion.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second it.
All righty, on the postponement.
Y'all support the postponement, and with the hopes that it's going to happen in fairly quick order. I know not tomorrow. I would also like to sit down with the county exec, talk to him about it. Council Gordon hasn't actually. We got this document.
Well, I did say that, but he didn't actually.
Yeah,
it's something you're looking forward to.
We got this document pretty recently. And then we also received a document with some notations late today from Minority Council Pascal, who's not here tonight, nor is the sponsor, who would both have to consent to any changes. But I know that we've all worked really hard on this and been working through, and I think we're in large part in the general direction of where we want to be, but I'd like to give us the best shot of getting this through to the finish line, so I support the postponement to a special meeting.
Can we postpone it to tomorrow's meeting to at least give Ken and the sponsor of the bill to then ultimately postpone it?
I think a better aspect with this one is we need to do a few things with this. There are some issues that that were brought up that need to be tightened. In other words, John, you might want to respond to one or two of them. My understanding is this resolution,
with all due respect, I don't think we need John to respond. I think we need to get Spitz Haven County Executive.
I talked with John today, and in other words, he actually indicated certain things that, I respect that probably does need a slight tightening.
I will say that we're going into what I guess you'd like to consider a good faith back and forth with the executive and his people, who decided to sit on a 15-page memo for a month. We could be voting on this tonight. It was them that decided, and now we're going to say, they got the best of intentions and they have concerns. It was the county executive that forced us into looking at this ethics board, the former county executive.
Right, who was the former county executive, yes.
And now we'll take their word for it after this 15-page memo that was sat on for a month.
But I don't. Yeah, I want to reframe that with all due respect, because I think that while I very much want to sit particularly with the county exec and get his thoughts on the memo, because I don't have his thoughts on that memo. That memo just came out, and his thoughts on what our legislation is presented as currently. I also want to give our council an opportunity to respond and frame our arguments where we have them. And I also, you for example, Joe, you had suggestions that we can't take up today because the sponsor's not here, and those would be changes to the law. So I want to see this, I really want to see this pass, and I believe change will happen. I just believe we give ourselves the best shot of actually affecting that change by just taking a couple of slow steps, not long. I mean, I believe Dave when Dave says this is going to be a special meeting happening soon. It's not. We're not waiting for the December meeting.
Yeah, I'm not waiting for this.
We just need a little time to allow for a response.
We have our meeting tomorrow, and then after that, in other words, I'm going to look at the schedule and get something on that very quickly on that, because I also want this thing to be fast. And I think after having a discussion with the county executive today, I don't see that he is taking this hard line stand on this at all. I don't see him doing that. He doesn't. He's not indicating that. I don't think he's. I don't think he's worrying about his power turf on this. I don't really think he is. It doesn't seem to be. It wasn't a real big giant concern of his. Not at all.
It's also. I think. I mean. It's not. I know it's not lost on you, Joe. But it's important to point out that the history of the back and forth on this issue goes to the previous administration, so it's like a follow, it's a through line, which is why I think we need to get. I haven't spoken to this county executive about this legislation at all. We've been dealing with all this other stuff, so Dave spoke to him today, but I'd like to, for us to be able to sit down. I'd like for David to be able to respond to the October 11th.
Well, that's the key also, is because when I was saying they responded, he kind of responded to me a little bit talking, but we need a written response. And that's the really key, is because of the way the county attorney wrote this, it was almost like, we're self-serving and all this, and that's what we're doing. And in other words, we have to be able to make that clear that's not the issue here. But they tried to make it in that manner. And that's what's really sad, because we tried to work through this all the way through and really worked at it in between and various meetings of this committee. Go ahead.
I just had a question, because I don't believe we received it. This memo refers back to a May 30th memo.
Of 2018.
Of 2019.
You already were in
that memo.
I have the July one, but not the May one.
Vicki had the May memo.
Okay. We got the July one.
That is the one that just refers to whether...
To referendum or not.
Needs a referendum.
Because I just don't remember the May... I just don't remember a May 30th one.
Dave, just like to make a comment, maybe
can
ask
you
a
check
question
with Vicki?
Chair Bartels had just mentioned that a lot of these issues that may deter us to work with the executive branch on this goes back to a former executive. Though this memo did come out, what Deputy Ryder just told me was that somebody gave a note to the county attorney as they were working on this that kind of went after me and painted the picture that you guys were just trying to protect yourselves. Who gave that memo to the county attorney, and who informed the county attorney? Somebody kind of led the county attorney down this nasty 15-page memo. And
well,
it was recent.
It was an assistant county attorney writing a briefing to the county attorney, and it was in the background information just laying down what they believed was.
And this is it's just bizarre.
Well, that was the problem.
We started off the meeting, I had mentioned issues I had with the county attorney's office. Now you have two county attorneys working together on a memo to undermine the legislative policy process.
I think it was the ghost of Christmas past.
Who decided when that memo was going to be released?
To the legislature?
Yeah.
So typically how these work is you have an assistant county attorney that will write a memo to the county attorney, who will review it and sign off on it, and then it's whoever requested it. I think at the time John and I had requested a memo of just the policy and legal analysis behind this piece of legislation. So Plant assigns it to one of his assistant county attorneys. They draft it as they see it and then send it to him. He reviews it. Again, sends it to us. We had to review it because I was here through the background. It was oversight on that paragraph, that third paragraph in the background. I should have asked for that to be removed. And I apologize to you that it didn't. I pulled it back from the Democratic caucus. It was amended and then sent out to the full legislature.
I asked why it took a month to give it to us.
It was dated October 11th. We did not see it the first time, October 11th.
No, and I know that there were additions to it and tweaks to it pretty recently before it.
A lot of work went into this 15-page memo on a small ethics board appointment change. One more quick question. Where did the county attorney that gave the information to the other county attorney that came up with that nasty spiel about me, where did they get their information? Do they listen to the laws and rules?
They were sat in many of the laws and rules.
I was at a lot of those laws and rules meetings. I don't remember seeing many county attorneys there.
They're all recorded.
And that's my point, Dave, that I made before. We have a county attorney's office that is constant. As they're asking for a raise to the county attorney's office, are we ever going to have a conversation about what this county attorney's office is up to? It's something John Parody was very passionate about. I've certainly experienced it now. We have county attorneys just listening to legislative meetings to come up with talking points to undermine us.
Sorry, my concern would be it was sort of indicating the mindset of the county attorney when they're actually writing this. That's my trouble. And with this, it's like the ghost of Christmas past. Maybe you might not, but some of you might not know what my referencing is, but some will.
I'd just like to
yes.
Now go ahead, Mark.
I mean, we talked about this with composting and other things. A lot of time attorneys look at legislative intent. Now, whether they impugned improper legislative intent, but I think listening to a legislative meeting to try to decide either look at legislative intent, but also look at the policy and the legal analysis is not an improper thing to do. They should be listening to committee meetings where this legislation is discussed.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to add, when we came up with the changes to this, we weren't talking about just the 23 of us here. We were talking about every county employee that could be affected by the ethics law. And getting to your point, Legislator Maloney, I was noticed that the county attorney's office, the payroll jumped in 2 years over $200,000. That seems very steep. None of the other departments have increased that much, and that's unsustainable if that keeps going.
Well, we've experienced a lot of what those extra dollars are going to working on tonight.
Anyway,
to undermine us.
All right, enough. I'd like to it was moved and seconded to postpone a special meeting to be scheduled shortly, and we haven't had the vote. Even then, I allowed that speaking, even though it was supposed to be on the postponement.
We were speaking on the postponement.
Somewhat, yeah. All right, so all those in favor of the postponement?
On the postponement.
Aye.
Any of those opposed? I know you can't wait for another special meeting.
Maybe, why don't you make it like Black Friday or something?
You want it on Black Friday? Okay.
So not to go to Woodbury Commons.
Yeah, to get out of shopping.
You don't go there. You don't have to honestly go there on Black Friday, do you? If I went there on Black Friday, they'd had me up on charges. I'd be murdering somebody. Already the... Where is the next one? Resolution 450, setting a public hearing on local law number 12. And this is adopting a county charter of law, the administrative code, and it's to require submission of the department budget estimates from elected officials to the legislature, be held on Tuesday, December 10th, is posted. So anybody want to, on the person like to get it moved?
I'll move it. Second.
Alrighty, on the issue.
You guys know what this is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do I need to move anybody? Mm-hmm. Or no? All right.
Explain to me, Joe, why we should do this.
Each of the elected officials, like
sheriff,
controller, yeah, you got it.
Clerk.
What happens is right now they give their proposal to the county executive, and then the county executive does whatever he does to the budget, and
tweaks
then we get it. we do not hear directly from the sheriff or the comptroller or whomever or the other county elected officials, that is, or the clerk, what their needs are and how, and we don't get that ability to deal with that issue. And instead, it creates the county executive has the ability to cut, basically say, here you go, this is your budget. You wanted two people? No, forget about it. And that has been the past. And I know, like, the bad sheriff often complained about it. Obviously, we know the comptroller complained about it.
We definitely know the DA complained
about it. And we know the DA complained about it. So it's an issue that we had the power of the person in the first place. And the point of this would be that they would put their budget directly to us.
So we would have four different budgets?
Their budget would come down to
somewhat. No. So I had spoken to the DA and the sheriff over the past couple of years, and what ends up happening is, I think it's, Jay, I mean, it's mid-year, it's early, August, June.
July-ish?
Just July.
They have their meetings?
That's when the department heads, or countywide elected officials, give their budget requests to the exec. We get them, like, in a couple of weeks. And we're supposed to be making these decisions. Now, the DA, people used to complain. Why, if Holly wants this, why doesn't he come to us? So when you start talking to these countywide elected officials, what you hear is, if I come to you with requests 6 months, you know, mid-year, the executive is going to take it out on my budget. Then I get less. They were basically scared to bring it to us and talk to us, the fund appropriators, because they were worried they were going to piss off the executive and then not get anything. So this gets us their requests in real time, midway through the year. So right now, we would have already been able to talk to them, vet, discuss, research for almost six months before we start making decisions on their budget. Then we get the budget that the executive presents us, and we can go check that to what the sheriff's asking for. Now, think about this. We have the executive and his large umbrella, the biggest part of the budget, coming to us and creating a lot of different positions. We talked about a couple of them tonight. What I envision is, at budget time, now having Mark and John come to us at the same time, the sheriff and the DA, now they're all, in theory, giving us far more information, far more data to prove what they want, because they're actually competing against each other for raises to management, to creating new positions. It really empowers us, and it takes the onus and the worry of the countywide elected officials from coming to us, because they just haven't.
We'll get it basically. We'll get the recommendations the same time that the county executive gets it back.
Yes, and I think
now the committee of oversight would be handling the budget from that department. Say we get the controllers, we'll be taking a look at it, the laws and rules. Am I correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, for clarity's sake, the executive still has that.
None of the executives, just the countywide elected officials. Yeah.
But the executive still gets their budgets also.
Yeah.
Requests. It's just that we're getting the requests the same time. In other words, that information is given to us at the exact same time.
We usually don't even know what they ask for.
We don't even know what the executive gave them.
Yeah, I mean, I think of it as just what you just said, as information, just right. as... an advanced sort of forecast of where the electeds are going with their budgets. I mean, certainly without seeing the context of the umbrella of the whole county picture, we don't know. I mean, an elected officer might be asking for a 10-person increase and substantial programmatic changes, and then in the context of the larger budget, we realize, well, that's not possible. So, but I just think having it that much earlier to be able to just consider and have it in the back of our minds, I don't think that's going to hurt us. I feel like we're always so pressed with getting this.
Well, I think it creates opportunity for discussion at the standing committee level.
Yeah, in other words, we will have it at a cabinet.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to this goal. I just feel like this method may trigger more adversarial relations. And it also seems to me a little bit like, it just seems like this statement that these countywide elected officials are somehow not coming to us because they're concerned, that is a statement that I don't want to take on face value. And I think that having those conversations in committees in the context of what do you need, what's going on, what's working well, that we've been starting to do more in the past year, would take care of this without kind of this statement of a specific day and that it's your budget, which may or may not have, you know, been formulated in that way. So it's, again, it's taking a hammer to fix this problem, which to me is just we should be having better conversations with these people. And if there is concern that the executive is going to, you know, put something else in the budget, I think that concern should be brought out in the open and talked about with the new executive and talked about with us. And I don't want to hear it secondhand from anybody. That's a very serious thing to let somebody float out there as though it's a truth.
Good.
So I just have three quick points. Well, two of them are points of clarity, and that's, this would only be, as far as the executive's office, this would only be the executive department. And so any sort of management raises that were given outside of, like, the executive department, as far as the elected official, it's just that office. As far as for the executive.
I don't think we wouldn't get anything from the executive.
Well, the way it's written, it says elected officials. So and the executive
we'll amend that out. So it was the four others.
And the four others. Yes.
And it's only information. It like this would be
there's no date
to it or anything. When the sheriff's department gives their budget or their request to the exec, they would give the same request to the legislature. It's enough. Right. It's a copy.
And I don't. It's very straightforward. To be blunt, I really don't. I see this county executive as looking at the other elected officials as partners. I really do feel that that's what his mindset is, and he looks at them as partners. And so I think what this does is it's nothing against him at all. I think it's something that is good. Now, Legislator Maloney may have brought up something that was negative in reference to the past county executive, and I do know that some were concerned in that manner as I had conversations with him. But having that said, this really is not meant to reflect on County Executive Bryan in any way or form. I really think that this is it's a common sense thing that gives us better budgeting process, more information, and I think more information is always better.
Yep. So two quick other points. So you get much of this information, I get it, you get it at a different time, but we put the request of the elected officials department. Electeds are the ones where if they request something, we keep that in there. You can look in there and you can see where the district attorney requested the six raises and then the two paralegal positions we gave the paralegal principal.
But what this does, it helps us drive policy also, because it helps us know ahead of time that this is what these people are requesting, and it also helps us turn around and get an understanding by saying, wait a minute, because we're going to be conservative also when it comes to, none of us want to increase that budget unless we have to, unless we see that there's a real true benefit from it. So I think in the long run, it'll also help the county executive.
Yeah. And then the only other time that has been different was at the request of the elected official, because their thought was, this initial request is like the beginning of a negotiation process. So they had requested several more positions, different other things. And then when we came back and said, okay, this is going to go into the county executive's budget, do you really want this large request? They came back and said, no, can you change it to this? And then, so I don't know that that makes a difference, but you may not see that initial kind of, they may just asking for less or whatever, knowing that it's going to become public right away.
And we'll be in on that conversation now. Thank you very much.
Do you want us to exclude the county executive on that? I mean, we got
it. It never meant the county executive sets his own budget.
He has his own budget, but the point is...
So you're talking about the other...
It never meant... This legislation was meant for the other four.
Okay.
That when they present their request, that we get it and know about it.
Then, yeah, I would request
that. All right, then I entertain an amendment.
Yeah, to remove the county executive.
As you're the sponsor, what was the amendment?
Second.
You and I and others.
That it does not include the county executive.
Then do you have
a
problem with that
amendment?
Executive department.
No, that's fine.
From elected officials other than the county executive to the legislature.
So elected officials other than the county executive.
Countywide.
Countywide, yeah. All righty, on that amendment.
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any none done? All right, now on the resolution itself, I'd like to entertain a vote on that.
Call it.
On the resolution?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. All righty. All right, I'm sorry, Laura, I should have, I think you wanted to stay and hang out anyway.
But you put me on the end. Oh, there's one more after.
All right, go ahead. Do you want to talk to us about this one?
Was there a motion to?
I'll move it.
Yep.
A second.
So, we have in Ulster County, we're noting a housing crisis. What we're getting are significant sales of larger buildings. There were just three more in the city of Kingston. I think it was $10 million. Within the last two or three years, there's been approximately six apartment complexes that have been purchased. And the complaint from the residents there is that they can't get in touch with anybody, that there's maintenance that isn't being done. At Lakeshore Villa in Esopus, they actually had to evacuate 27 units because of a gas leak. So this proposed law is that an office is established in Ulster County. You know, it'll have to be an office that is staffed at least 35 hours and that has a contact information. So in case of emergency or just maintenance issues, there's somebody that they can get in touch
with. What size... how many apartment
buildings? How many units?
How many apartment units?
It's 20 and up.
20 and up.
Yeah. So it's not a duplex or anything.
Okay, so I'll support it going for public hearing if that's what you want to happen right now. I do have concerns. I looked at the other legislation that you referenced, and in those cases, both in Kingston and New Paltz, they don't require a physical office. They require a person that lives in the town, which is really different for me than the county. Being someone who lives at the southern end of the county, if I had a 20-unit building in Shangum, I might live in the neighboring county and be 1 mile from my apartment building.
And that option was put in.
It was?
Yes.
So
yeah, that was the second be it resolved. That if it was within 15 miles, that it could be.
But again, 15. I feel like 15 is a tight definition. But I'm open to hearing what people say, and hopefully you're open to having a conversation about it, whether or not it's an office manager. It has to be a staffed office for 35 hours. That's a substantial cost. And also, I worry about. I know that there are problem landlords, but there are also good landlords. So it's like now we're painting everyone with the same brush, which is just a concern of mine. But again, it's a public hearing, so I'm open to hearing the public. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure where I am on it yet. And I'd also, in order to move forward, I'd feel more comfortable if we brought in some of those people that operate these kind of units. Not necessarily all the problem ones, but operate the units in the all over the county and hear from the people who would be affected, and maybe all the good landlords already do have offices. I don't know.
A lot
members.
Big person.
I'll see if Steve Mayer can make it next
meeting. Yeah. My biggest concern is what's the difference of this unit sitting in New Paltz, sitting in any one of the towns. And local code is really driving this, can we dictate that kind of change, or is that a home rule issue? That was the only thing that came to my mind, you know what I mean? Because Kingston has a law, Newport has their own law, and
the
they're big.
The surface is looking at one.
Yeah, so my question is, can we legally, and I guess I would ask you, Dave, can we legally dictate something like this outside of a local code because it's home rule?
We can, sure. I mean, we have the authority to do it. But there's nothing, if we require them to be in the county and Newport requires them to be in the town, those are entirely consistent.
Okay.
Yeah.
If
can we dictate that what if one of the towns doesn't have something? I guess their local law would prevail, and as long as it is.
Oh, if there's a conflict, who would prevail?
Yeah. I'm just asking because I
depend on what it was.
Yeah, I kind of thought this kind of stuff was, just.
This is a type of a law that's neither consigned to towns or counties. You've looked through, like, town law, for example, and county law. This sort of authority is not in either, managing landlords is not in either one. So it's each one is doing police power.
Unless a town has something in their own code.
No, I'm saying, but my point is that...
It's not zoning.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. If it was zone, if we tried to zone, it'd be like, no, that's
no,
a town.
That's
but
no.
Regulating
okay.
landlords is not something that the okay. state structure consigns to either towns or counties. Each municipality is using its police power.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if there was a conflict, we'd have to work it through, but
right.
it sounds like we're requiring something
from
the county.
Yeah, no, I was
county,
just asking. That was what
town.
Came
it's,
to my mind.
It's pretty consistent.
Okay.
But my concern here, I had some concerns with, like you said, about the 35-hour week and things like that. But having said that, in some ways I'd like it tighter. Because my mindset is, in other words, if you're somebody that's renting even just, you have three apartments and you don't do anything with them, and you're, in other words, these people, and something happens where there's a pipe breaks and you can't get a hold of the person that owns the property. I know in Kingston you're required in many ways you have to have a contact number that you can, that it's got to be a good contact number that you can get a hold of somebody. It's sort of exempt, I think, if you live in the house, obviously, and you're renting an upstairs apartment or whatever. But, we really need to make some of these tighter. We also need to start thinking, I don't know if we have the ability to do any types of rent control, but it is getting insane in Ulster County at points. I mean, some of these places have jacked their rent over 25% with the new lease. I mean, you take a look at it, and for instance, Dutch Village, they did 25% increase their rent. Somebody was paying $9.50, they're told the following day, well, by the way, here's your new contract, it's $12.50. Same building, if they had another point, they went from, $10.25 to $1,400. So, I mean, there has to be some type of... in my mindset, we have to protect people from that type of thing.
Just the state did just pass legislation.
Yeah, the state, but I don't know if we have any, if we're able to...
Under the legislation, towns, municipalities are able to create rent control mechanisms.
I mean, we need to address that issue, I believe.
Specific for towns and not counties?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't allow, does it allow the counties?
No, we were already allowed, right?
No.
But there's a...
No.
Isn't there a...
I don't know if we're allowed
vacancy requirement in order for them to set... You can't just... I don't think it's a little bit more requirements than that. Based on percentage... Yes, I know the city of Kingston definitely qualifies under the current.
I don't know if any other municipality does.
In the town would, so I'm just it's not as easy.
All right, I'm sorry, Joe.
With regards to Laura's piece of legislation, look, rental properties are. I bet you half the people in this room have one, and it is a profitable when you get into that 20 plus range and way beyond, which there are people in this county, and a lot of them aren't really from around here, and a lot of them don't have the best interests in mind. I've had people come to me about it, people concerned in Saugerties with some of these complexes being bought and how they're being run. And this is the little people not a lot of these people that are getting pushed out or going from 9 to 1200 not getting help. They're not legislators. They're not on a not-for-profit. They're not on a political committee. They're not coming to public comment quite a bit. I think Laura Hartram was one of the only people that I've ever heard. It just so happens that she was somebody that was involved that happened to experience what thousands of people in this county are experiencing. And if somebody wants to have a business that has over 20 rentals, chances are they have money. And if you want to do business in this county, as far as I'm concerned, that kind of business, and you want to have over 20 units, then at the very least, have an office in the county. And if you don't, then don't own 20-plus units in Ulster County. That's how I feel about it. I love this legislation, and I think it goes to a small extent, really will help a big problem. Not, we got to do a lot more than that, but no, it's a start.
This point, I think,
and the last thing I'm worried about is
necessarily
offending somebody that owns
the numbers, the 35-hour thing, but what I do like is I think it makes sense to have this conversation. Send it, have a public hearing.
Let's
get
the
information from the public, and it'll give us an ability to maybe adjust. Go ahead.
Thank you. No, I totally support this issue, and I think it's an important one to look into. I mean, just that one example alone that you just spoke of is reason enough to look into this issue. But I think just as Legislator Maloney said, you know, a lot of those who own these type of facilities, and I mean, I think probably there's at least, even it looks like I know of multiple, in my district alone, I have multiple such complexes. Fortunately, I haven't had issues with any of mine, but I just, like, I think they're more prevalent than we realize in our county, and I think it's an important conversation to have. But I do know, like Legislator Maloney have, that, you know, I'll call them this lobby, or this business, they're very, you know, involved and they're very protective of their bottom line. And I just make sure that I think it's important that as we move this and discuss this, that we make sure every I is dotted and every T is crossed and it's as tight as possible. Because I could totally see this being a very targeted from that lobby itself, from the real estate lobby, to really try and dig their teeth into it and, you know, break apart. So I just want to. Whether, you know, the specifics in terms of a 15-mile radius versus a county-wide radius, you know, aside from those things, just make sure that everything's really, you know, spot on as we move forward with it.
I don't know if you know, Laura, or if Mark at the executive's office knows, do we have a housing inventory of what exists in this county?
No.
That would be actually really helpful, and I know it's something that was brought up by John over the years, just in terms of, in order to assess, you know, where we need to be, we should probably start by assessing where we're at, and it's worth, I mean, not necessarily just in support of this piece of legislation, but it would be good to know how many of what kind of rental capacity there is in the county and where it is, and that would be helpful information for a lot of reasons.
Go ahead.
I just also like to see if we have towns and other municipalities that have laws that attempt to do this, I'd like to see those, because I think this is the right target, but I'm not sure it's the right tool. And the question came up in the previous discussion of this. Is there something you need to hear? So this discussion came up at a previous committee in terms of whether there was some other mechanism that would capture better the bad actors and not burden those that we think are, you know, do a good job. And I have been trying to think of what it would be. I don't know if it could be something like if you've had a certain number of complaints of not being able to be contacted or something, that this comes in. Because there are people that probably run very nice rentals that do not fit this, that now will have to either sell to someone who may be less good as a landlord, or land master than they are, or take this cost, which could be passed along to the tenants. And so I think there's real potential here for unintended consequences, and So I'd like us to really dig in and look at this. I would prefer we did more of that before the public hearing, but I think we'll have to do it one way or the other to really get it to where we can
just
go forward.
Just to go back to answer two questions, new policy in the city of Kingston, it's essentially if you are a landlord, you have to register the property. So it doesn't matter if you have one or 50. So that encompasses all of it. So that actually that law is, those laws are stricter. So it would supersede.
And I know that they review each of the new rentals. They're pretty.
Could we make that countywide?
I think that's.
You are impacted. I mean, I had this conversation with Dave. It's then I think you're impacting even the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. I had a rental. If I made $80 on a good month, it was a good month. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course the other thing is, with setting the cap, a lot of these apartment complexes that were purchased by one company did have offices which were closed after they purchased them. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, my read, and I'll look at it again, but my read on the New Paltz, which was really helpful, the New Paltz and the Kingston legislation, was not only did they have that more restrictive registration requirement, but in terms of rather than an office up to a certain size, but it might even be all the way down to the single, they require that there be a natural person who's a resident, who's accountable, who's reachable, whose phone number is, so it's not a manned or personed office for 35 hours a week, but it is the requirement that there be somebody on record who can be reached, which
right.
strikes me as
and response.
Maybe more. But you and I, we can talk about that if you want to move it now. Then whatever.
I have a similar question. Tracy really touched on that, but in terms of a physical office, for example, you're trying to achieve a bunch of things, and you want to make sure that somebody can pick up a phone, respond to an email, and if you have a physical crisis like Cassidy, you want somebody there in X number of hours. And so I'm just wondering whether there's a better mechanism that might actually be cheaper instead of, I mean, an office would what you do in the 20th century. Maybe an email that responds in 6 hours. If there's a performance standard. It's a question. I don't know the answer. I'm just saying, is there a better way to skin the cat?
Anybody else?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. That. You were doing
wrong legislator. Very well.
Wrong legislator. Call the vote.
I was distracted.
On the cat or the...
call the vote.
To the public I would like to to get the public comment. I mean, procedurally, since
we
already
call the
vote,
what
we can do an amendment.
You know what? I think we get the public comment. Yes, it's substantial. We're probably going to change it.
It's coming back.
I think it makes more sense to get some input on this.
Because coming back to committee for any type of amendment.
Because not only that, what will end up happening is hopefully we'll get people that have been having problems, so we understand the problem.
Stand with the problem.
So I'd entertain a motion to...
Dave, can I say something? Before we have a public hearing and spend $600, can we have an open committee meeting dedicated to this and maybe invite some of the stakeholders?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would that be a better idea, Laura, or it's up to you?
I think I'd like to move forward with it, but when we get to the point, if it gets, you know, depending on the comments, if it gets kicked back, we absolutely should. I mean, we have... Housing, a New York State Housing Authority, and I believe our county planner is part of that, but I think we need to, as a county, really start jumping into, we need a committee. So.
We'll just get this $600 out of you. reduce your pay by that.
I'll split it with you.
All right. Like to move it, and all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the last one, because we already took care of the other one. Did we take care of it?
Yeah, we took care of it.
I thought we voted on it. 11 on my schedule here is a late resolution with a one-year term
Move it.
Would be...
Second,
Ag Society.
Ag Society for the fairgrounds. Oh. Now, I'm
call the vote,
under
call
the understanding vote. That we are going to we're going to look at this in quite depth in order to move on to the future, and I would hope that we don't... that we're not saying that again next year.
No, we're not.
There's
already been a meeting of the legislative working group with representation from the executive's office. Then subsequent to that, I met with representation from the Ag Society myself just to talk about where we were at, and that's how we arrived here, because we really talked about the functional need for the extension. But I reaffirmed what we had said publicly, that we're working toward a longer-term solution, and we're not waiting a year to do that. The clerk's office and Fawn today, we're trying to schedule the next meeting for as soon as this week. They have a board meeting Wednesday. There's some scheduling issues, but if it's not this week, it'll be the week after Thanksgiving. We're continuing to move forward. This is really at the request of the Ag Society to make sure that they can have operations flow
right,
smoothly through the next
advertise.
Year. But I believe that between the working committee and the meetings at the table with the standing committee, but also my reaching out to the Ag Society, I believe they appreciate that there's a good faith effort. And we've talked about where we may not see eye to eye, like where there may be, but we're working through all these things.
There was an amendment put in there, a revision to it, that the their entertainers.
Yeah.
The entertainment would have to be approved.
Do you want me to talk about the two pieces? So there's two pieces. One is that and prior to a certain amount of days before the fair, the Ag Society sends the list of entertainers to the county legislature and the county executive's office. If they don't hear objections within 10 days, they just assume that that list is approved and they move on. If there is objections, we can get into that there. Also, because there's been a long-standing policy for the last several years that they don't allow Confederate flag merchandise to be sold or displayed, it was sort of a handshake agreement. We just memorialized that within this license agreement. And so those are the only two changes. Otherwise, it extends it for a year. And the president of the Ag Society, the chairperson and minority leader were aware of both those changes prior to them happening, being put in there, and all three had signed off.
I spoke to the Ag Society about the latter, about the Confederate flag, because that had been an understood, and their expectation was that the agreement would codify it. The concern was that it would just be specific to Confederate flag merchandise.
All right, any other discussion?
No.
All right, I'd like to call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Any opposed? None? There we go. You were already signed. We were at it.
This might have been a record night for you, Dave.
Anyone?
Eight pass, only two postponed, man.
Wow.
Killing the game.
Secondly. You guys
second.
This is no longer the committee where resolutions come to die.
Wow.